509 on WTMJ. Hope you are staying warm. We're going to be talking to meteorologist Brian Nesnansky in just a few minutes. My goodness. Talking about the negative 25 wind chill. Okay, so we're so focused on that and next year's governor race in our state. Let's take a look at who's putting his hat in the race for Minnesota governor. My Pillow founder, Mike Lindell. He came under fire after the 2020 election. You may remember Dominion Voting Systems sued him for defamation, alleging he repeatedly promoted false claims that Dominion machines rigged the 2020 election and harmed the company's reputation. A federal jury found Mike Lindell liable for defamation and ordered him to pay about $2.3 million in damages. So now he's running for governor. And it made me think about John Mercure saying the most memorable interview that he did during the RNC was when he talked to Mike Lindell. This is what Mike Lindell, this is real, what he told John Mercure, what he remembers about Milwaukee and his best memory.
And I know Milwaukee. I go back in the day when I was a crack addict. In my book, there's a lot of stories about Milwaukee here. And where I was the media's darling, and all of a sudden, the media's, they're hating me and attacking me and going, you know, he was a drug, you know, he used drugs. Well, I already told everybody I did that, you know. It's like, really? Is that a newsflash? Give me a break, you know.
That was the wildest interview. He was like, yeah, I do crack under this bridge in Milwaukee. He said it multiple times in the interview.
Oh, wow.
Wasn't that weird?
That is super weird. But I would just think you said $2.3 million in damages he had to pay. That's a lot of pillows, Julia. That's a lot of pillows.
It's a lot of pillows. Hey, if you also buy the pillow, it comes with all this other stuff.
Oh, wow.
You know, I only know because it comes up on the commercials all the time, the My Pillow.
But here's the thing, too, with the state of Minnesota. We thought it was weird when Jesse the Body Ventura was running for governor. And I'm like, this is a pro wrestler. So I wouldn't just say, don't worry about him. I mean, because he does have money. And a lot of times that can get you far. Let's just say that.
Well, one of the people still in the race for governor here in our state is a college student. One of them. Another one already dropped out. Bill Berrien, he's a business owner and a former Navy SEAL, and he was caught up in some allegations that he was following different sites that didn't go with his views. You can look that up yourself if you want to know more information on that, but he's no longer running. So, I mean, I just found it interesting that now we have the MyPillow guy and many other people putting their hat in the race for different things.
So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, clearly you don't have to have any experience to hold these positions.
It's 512 on WTMJ. Okay, coming up next, TMJ4 News chief political reporter Charles Benson. He has been in the courtroom all day with the Judge Hannah Dugan trial. He was able to see all the jurors that came up and answered all the questions, lots of political questions. They are now seated. He tells us what's next, coming up. He is the chief political reporter for TMJ4 News and Scripps News national political correspondent, Charles Benson. Charles, thank you for joining us.
Hey,
you have been
Julian,
spending the day at the jury selection of Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan, accused of helping an undocumented immigrant temporarily elude ICE agents. So I know that three jurors were struck this morning, and now they're seated. Can you tell me what the makeup is?
So we know there's going to be 14 jurors right now. 12 will decide the case. There's going to be two alternates. That's kind of what they do in this situation. Based on what we could see, 9 men, 5 female were selected. And look, they had about a potential pool of 70 to 80 folks that were in there. These are people who had already gone through a lengthy multi-page questionnaire to, you know, kind of learn more about who they are, what some of their thoughts are, how they get the news that about this particular case. And so when they arrived there this morning, Judge Lynn Edelman, he's presiding over this case. He's been doing this for a while. He asked them some broad general questions, you know, some yes or no questions, things like, because he talked about the case and potential witnesses and asked if they knew any of the witnesses, had they ever been to the courthouse, you know, so they were sort of routine questions. Then after that, they kind of drilled down on some more specific questions with a few of the potential jurors. That happened outside the presence of all the other jurors and inside the judge's chambers with federal prosecutors, defense team. Judge Dugan was there as well. And so initially was being done out of the view of the media as well. We couldn't hear what was going on. So we pushed back on that saying, look, you know, you indicated we were going to potentially hear this part about what the lawyers were asking. So after there was a big conference, they did let us listen in on it. We weren't in the room. There was a mic in there just so that we could hear things. And so based on those questions, they were able to narrow the list to 14. They now have 14 with the two alternates.
Charles, what does Judge Dugan look like in court? Did she seem confident? Does she have a whole bunch of lawyers around her?
Well, she has her defense team that have been with her. You know, she's familiar with state court, right? She's been a judge for a while. And so she's not, you know, it's not like she's saying anything in the courtroom. She's just an observer of what's happening and watching what her defense team is doing, what's happening within, you know, what the judge is saying, Judge Lynn Edelman here. So she's there with her defense team.
Charles, I know you have been a part of a lot of these cases or jury selections. Is there anything that stuck out to you today about this particular case?
Well, you know, one thing did, and it's something Judge Lynn Edelman talked about, which is this civic responsibility, the duty. You know, this is how the justice system works. And so he was very gracious and thankful for those who had come there today and to make sure they understood what was going on, what their responsibilities would be if they got selected. And so, you know, you sort of then feel the weight of this because the justice system is based on what juries think when presented with a case. And so it's always important and interesting to me to see that process.
You know, also, Charles, there was talk of a possible plea deal and we wouldn't even get here. How high are the stakes right now for her?
As for any defendant that would be in a situation, you know, once you go to trial, you put that decision in the hands of 12 people. But, you know, the federal prosecutors say their case will take about 3 days. They have potentially 25 to 28 witnesses. We're going to hear from federal agents, ICE agents, people who were outside that courtroom back in April when they showed up to make the arrests of Eduardo. Likely see, and there are audio recordings as well. And so what that will tell them and how that will weigh on jurors will be a part of this case.
You know, maybe the hardest part of this that the defense may have to figure out how they're going to defend it is that, you know, she can do whatever she wants in a courtroom. But once she helped, according to the court documents, sneak him out, so to speak, out of the courthouse, there was a foot pursuit that took place. And it wasn't very long, but I mean, what if one of the agents died? Or what if someone was hurt? What if a driver was hurt or an innocent person? I mean, this could have been a lot worse.
Well, I think you're just speculating beyond, you know, what happened. And so I think the jurors are going to be able to see what did happen, what federal prosecutors think she did, and what the defense will put forward that she did or didn't do, you know. So this is what happens in these trials. They can only look at things that are in front of them, not what could have, what might have happened. It's more about what was, and it really boils down to about 10 to 15 minutes of time there. And so that's why it's going to be interesting to hear who all these witnesses will be, what kind of information they will provide, and how the defense will try to counter those things through cross-examination.
And Charles, I know there's going to be so much material that is presented in this case. From a personal standpoint or your personal opinion, do you think this will be a trial that is prolonged, or do you feel like once all the evidence is out there, it won't take long to reach a decision?
So I'm out of the guessing game. You know, I have learned from day one that it's I don't predict the outcome of elections. And I'll never predict the outcome of a jury, especially on how long it can take. So, look, they're given the time to go through this. There'll be jury instructions. They'll get an idea of what their role and responsibility will be. And that's when it's in their hands and when everybody, including us, the defense, the prosecutors, Judge Dugan, will all have to wait.
So this will go by, yeah, I mean, the jury selection went by pretty fast, so... Could
so
there
was 2 days set up for that, yeah. Right. So we thought it was going to be Thursday and Friday. There was this first pool of potential jurors. Then there was going to be a second one tomorrow if they needed to get there. But, yeah, I mean, it started at 9:30. By, you know, 12:15, they had taken a break. They came back. And I think it was in place by 3:30, if I'm remembering correctly from my notes. So, yeah, it moved pretty fast. But that questionnaire helped that because they had a sense mm-hmm. of what people were saying in that questionnaire and then the additional questions that came up.
So will there be any court tomorrow, opening statements, or
no.
It just starts Monday?
No, and so people are wondering, like, oh, you know, why not start tomorrow? Because they planned it, you know, for this potential Thursday and Friday, and because, you know, witnesses and others need to be told mm-hmm. when to be there and all that. I think that's why they set December 15th and then thought, let's come in earlier, meaning the week before, to do the jury selection.
Got it. He is Scripps News national political reporter and TMJ4 News chief political reporter, Charles Benson, the best in the business. Charles, thank you.
You're welcome.
He is chief meteorologist. The chief is back. All right, of TMJ4 News. Brian Nisnansky. Brian, we missed you.
Yeah, Julia Telly, how are you guys doing? Yeah, I was off a few days. Nothing, I wish I had more exciting reasons to be off, except for I had PTO days to burn by the end of the year.
Oh, I get it. Well deserved, yeah. Brian. Where are you right now? I saw that you were amongst wonderful holiday lights.
Yeah, so we're up at Illuminate Ozaukee, which is in Zinert Park here in Cedarburg. And it is a wonderful display. They take donations. I think they ask a suggested $20 per car. So pack them in. The proceeds go to area nonprofits and charitable organizations. So it's one of those holiday lights that obviously are great to see, but also you're giving back to the community.
That's wonderful. Okay. I'm sure that you're very busy talking about those negative wind chills coming up.
Oh, the weekend looks brutal, guys. And I know it's Wisconsin. I get it. This is pretty early, though, for this kind of stuff. I mean, the average high today is still 37, which seems incredibly warm. We're just off to a really cold start this winter, and technically it's not even winter yet. You got about 10 more days until the first day of winter officially for us. So, but don't tell Mother Nature. We definitely have winter already here in southeastern Wisconsin. It looks like it really ramps up this weekend.
So, Niz, from all early reports, we just got to make it to Monday, huh?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday, we're talking wind chills 20, 25 below zero. There might even be some spots that are 30 below zero wind chills. Actual temperatures are going to dip below zero Friday night into Saturday morning, and then once again Saturday night and into Sunday morning. Sunday morning might end up being the coldest period. We could see maybe readings, actual temperature ranging from -5 lakeside to -10 to -15 inland, and wind chills maybe as cold as 30 below. So, yeah, it's going to be super cold. Cold weather advisory criteria, I would say. So look for that to come from the National Weather Service. Might even get cold enough to get close to the extreme cold warning stuff. So we're getting to that threshold that if this wasn't landing over a weekend, and it was a weekday, we would be close to having schools being canceled. But it's not happening over the weekday. So kids, sorry, lands over the weekend.
Oh, wow. You know, and all of the snow, is this normal, Brian? Am I just being a baby?
No, I mean, we're ahead of pace. I mean, we have more than twice the amount of snow that we typically have this time of year. And it seems even more than that because, I mean, to be honest, the last couple decades, there have been more above average Decembers or before Christmas time than not. In fact, I would even say, like, if we look at certain aspects of climate change locally, one of the biggest spikes in temperature would be the first part of winter. Now, on the flip side, it seems like some winters have lasted longer. Into April, we've had plenty of snow. So we've seen somewhat of a change in season over the last couple of decades, but that has not been the case this year. Again, we're back to old school winter here for December.
Wow. Okay, Brian, take us home with a 5-day.
All right, guys. So for tonight, again, a cold night, not terrible yet. And the wind is a light, so it's not that big of a deal. 12 degrees for your low temperature in Milwaukee, 7 inland. Tomorrow, back into the 20s, a high temperature of 27, and a chance of some very, very light snow tomorrow afternoon. As we head into tomorrow night, the bitter cold air arrives. Temperatures will likely dip below zero across all of southeastern Wisconsin. Wind chills by Saturday morning, we're talking around 25 below zero for some. High temperature on Saturday, only around 7 for a high. And then Saturday night into Sunday morning, again, well below zero again. A high of 7 degrees on Sunday with wind chills still below zero. But as Telly mentioned earlier, Monday we have to look forward to, because Monday right now, it looks like we're back up to 22, and then Tuesday, maybe as high as 35, and then Wednesday, 41 degrees, guys. So it looks like we thaw out next week.
Oh, thank you.
Summer.
I know, exactly. Get our convertibles
right
out. Yeah. He is Chief Meteorologist Brian Nesnansky with TMJ4 News. Will we see you at 6 o'clock on Channel 4?
Yep, 6 o'clock. We'll be out here at Illuminate Ozaukee. Come on down if you're watching right now. Again, Zinert Park, it's on the south end of Cedarburg, and it's a $20 donation
awesome.
For your car.
Awesome. Yep. All right, we'll be watching, Brian.
All right, see you guys.
From sidelines to the studios and everything in between, no one brings you closer to the action.
Micah Parsons is on the trajectory to a first ballot Hall of Fame. That's the trajectory he's on, just plain and simple what it is.
It's time to get caught up on the green and gold with today's insider, ESPN's Alex Stroh, on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
What the hell's going on out here?
All right, Green and Gold Insiders is sponsored by Window Nation. He is our Green Bay Game Day host and ESPN Milwaukee's Alex Stroh. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Happy Thursday, Julia. Good to be back with you.
Okay, so I'm looking at the Broncos game.
Oh, boy. It's a fun one.
Bo Nix. There's different headlines of what he's saying about facing Micah Parsons.
Read them to me.
You don't need to make him bigger than the game. So that's his strategy. They're talking about embracing the underdog role Bo Nix has against Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
So he's trying to boost himself. Do you think that just makes Micah Parsons even more upset? Because remember when he said he wanted to kick the S?
Yes.
The S out of the Bears?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He bulletin board material.
He did say that last week. So what we've learned in our few months learning who Micah Parsons is as a member of the Green Bay Packers, simply put, he's a crazy person. He does like – I compared him last week to Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, the method acting, right? And so last week he manufactured disrespect from the Bears. He just made it up. He said, they've disrespected me. Nobody's disrespected him. He'll probably take this and say, well, Bo Nix is disrespecting me because he says I'm not bigger than the game. And he's going to use that as fuel and make a big impact. So I find this approach from the Broncos interesting. They've won 10 in a row. That's the longest win streak in the NFL, the Broncos have. The Packers have the longest win streak in their conference of 4 in a row. But they're going on the road to high elevation, to a tough place to play, as favorites. They're 2.5-point favorites, according to Vegas, which is interesting to me, given the fact that Denver is 11-2, that they have the best record in football. It should be a big-time matchup, dare I say a Super Bowl preview, which is really, really exciting. These are two of the best teams in football right now. And Bo Nix, despite not being having super sexy stats like Jordan Love might have, he's still a good quarterback. It's his second year in the league only, so he's still kind of growing and learning. But from a media perspective, that seems like a savvy vet right there. Don't make one player bigger than the game. I like that move from Bo Nix.
And we have Corey Sparks with us, our WAN executive producer in place for John, who's still on his listener trip, his second listener trip of the year, or third.
I think it's third at least. It feels like the third in the last 3 months. John's on vacation a lot. Miss him, though. What a good guy.
Yeah. The Broncos have one of the best corners in the league. They've won 10 straight, Stroh. What do you think Matt LaFleur is dialing up right about now as his team prepares for one of their toughest challenges yet?
Yeah, defensively, I would say, Corey, you're absolutely right. I think it is the toughest challenge yet for Green Bay, and it's particularly for quarterback Jordan Love. And aside from Patrick Surtain, who you just referenced, one of the best corners in the league, the reigning defensive player of the year, you look at just strictly the sack numbers. Denver has 55 sacks on the year. Second place has 44. Wow. They have 11 more sacks than every other team in the league. So they get after the quarterback really well, and that's something that Jordan Love has continued to grow at is avoiding pressure. But with an offensive line that's been shuffling all season long, going up against this defense, without a doubt is their toughest test yet. But Jordan Love is also playing the best football, dare I say, of his career the last – really this season. I mean, this has been his best season – and it's Toyotathon, right? So, I mean, he's just playing his best football, period, this time of the year typically. So I'm intrigued to see what this looks like. Could it be a 10-7 final score, or does Jordan Love find a way to get after this Broncos defense, which is all things considered a really good defense, and is he able to manufacture 24, 27 points? That's what I'm looking to, and I don't have the answer for you yet. Hopefully I do by Sunday at noon when Green Bay game day starts here on WTMJ.
That makes me think about the first quarter against the Bears this past weekend when he was throwing to Golden and then that was intercepted.
Yeah.
So if there's 55 sets, my goodness.
Yeah, they've gotten after the quarterback really well.
That could really put Love under pressure and possibly make a mistake.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's been really good in terms of mistakes this year, all things considered. He only has four interceptions, but you referenced the one last week, Julie, against the Bears. That was one of the four. I think all four times this year we've gone, what are you doing, man? What are you looking at?
That was sad.
But luckily, he's got that quarterback amnesia that you love to see where he just kind of says, okay, yeah, I made a mistake. And then he goes out and throws three touchdowns and ultimately gets a big win last week. So I've been really impressed by his growth, Jordan Love's, that is, what he's been able to manufacture and accomplish in 2025. It looks like a quarterback that's grown up. So this is a really fun test for him on Sunday against one of the league's best defenses.
I know. And there's also some really good Wisconsin connections to the Broncos. The assistant coach played for the Badgers.
Yeah, Jim Leonard.
So I think that's really fun. And they're 2.5-point favorites, according to Las Vegas. But I don't know. I feel like they could be under the gun. They could possibly, unfortunately, lose this game.
They certainly could. I think this was one where you looked at the schedule that came out back in May, and you're circling this one going, yeah, that's a good defense. That's a team that's on the rise. They were a playoff team a year ago. Certainly, it's a tough road environment, which is fun. So I'm not ruling it out. I haven't made my official game pick yet, which I will do, of course, on Green Bay game day. I've only picked against the Packers twice this year. I've been wrong both times.
I hope I'm wrong.
Maybe I'll pick against them just to make sure they win. I think that's ensuring victories for them this year. So reverse psychology for you.
Good stuff. Strove, switching gears a little bit. Josh Jacobs had one of his best games of the season against the Bears after a handful of not-so-great performances. Is that him getting healthier, or what did you see on Sunday that might have been different from recent performances?
Yeah, didn't practice today as he continues to deal with that kind of thigh bruise / knee injury. But you're right. I think the offensive line is the big story there, though. They've finally solidified that interior line, left guard, center, right guard, after the injury of Elton Jenkins, who, look, I'm not going to dive too deep into offensive line play, but you know the name Elton Jenkins. That's because he's been such a good, serviceable offensive lineman for them throughout his career. But he just isn't a center, and him getting injured has actually been a weird way to say it's been an upgrade for the offensive line, where they have guys playing more comfortable spots, and they've been able to establish that run game that they had trouble with earlier in the year. So you're absolutely right, Corey. I think the offensive line's the bigger story, but Josh Jacobs is one of the best workhorse backs in the league, and we're in December. We're in the cold months, baby, and that's where workhorse backs shine, and he certainly did Sunday against the Bears.
Okay, and then looking towards the Bears, did you see the time changed?
I did, yeah. 7:20 on a Saturday. I'm sure the taverns around here won't be having fun at all.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a big sign. That may be a good sign for the Packers this, you know, playing against the Broncos.
Yeah, so their next two games after the Broncos are flexed to primetime Saturday night games, 2 weeks in a row. Ravens game at the end of December is also going to be a 7:20 kick at Lambeau Field on a Saturday night. So back-to-back Saturday games coming up, and obviously a good afternoon tilt here against Denver. So big-time games, only four left, right? I mean, you've got, as you mentioned, Denver this week, and you've got at Chicago next Saturday. You host Baltimore, who's still trying to keep their playoff hopes alive in Week 17. And then you go to Minnesota, who's not very good Week 18, your final game of the regular season. But wouldn't they love to play spoiler for the Packers if they could prevent them from winning the division or prevent them from getting the number one seed in the NFC if that's the situation at the end of the year? All of these games have meaningful implications for the Packers as it stands right now. It's a fun time of year. I'm excited.
Mark Tauscher said he hated playing against the Vikings. At that stadium would filter in fake crowd noise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they still do, I think. So, yeah, I would hate that too. Well, they do that stupid horn thing in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? A skull? Yeah, I hate that. Yeah.
Come on. I like when we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not them.
No.
In a mockery. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You mentioned big time games, big time player. That's Christian Watson, 90 yards off of being the team's leading receiver. And he's played just half the game so far since he came back from injury. I know he got the 1-year extension after going down with another knee injury. Strofe, if he keeps this up, what are the odds he gets offered a semi-long-term extension before too long?
Yeah, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I'll answer that. But I just want to acknowledge something that I think people are forgetting about Watson. He tore his ACL in 2025.
Yep.
This calendar year, he tore his ACL. He came back. He looks stronger. He looks faster. And he looks like, to your point, Corey, the team's number one receiver. The Packers look like geniuses for adding another year to that contract. But now they've made it in a way where you'll know all these names. Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Christian Watson. Their contracts all expire at the end of next year. So they're going to have some decisions to make. But I think, to your point, if it is right now and I'm looking and I say I can have two of those guys long term, you're picking Kraft and Watson, and then Reed would be your third choice. So it's an interesting predicament, but the Packers getting another year of Watson when he's looked like he's elevated himself to the team's number one receiver is big time by Russ Ball in that front office. But yeah, he's been awesome, hasn't he? I mean, like that what he had with the 41-yard touchdown against the Bears, he did all the work. I mean, Love hit him over the middle, and he ran. He just outran everybody. Yeah. It was really fun to watch.
He is your host of Green Bay Game Day. Check him out on ESPN Wisconsin's 94.5. Thank you, Alex Strofe. We'll talk to you next week.
Julia, you're the best. Talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks.